powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Joining us here on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, he is the newest Mariner. That'd be second baseman Adam Frazier joining us. Adam, I mean, I imagine it was a crazy weekend for you. First off, want to say welcome to Seattle. I hear you're not in Seattle proper just yet, but over the Thanksgiving weekend, you get the call that you're getting traded. I imagine it was crazy hectic for you, at least over the last 48 hours or so.
Yeah, thank you. It was a crazy holiday weekend. I wasn't really expecting to get traded, but I'm pretty excited about it. And, Seattle's got a great young club and good ball club. So I'm happy to be joining these guys and I'm looking forward to getting out there.
Now, in your brief conversations over the last couple of days with those in the Mariners organization, what have they been like? Have you been able to talk with manager Scott Servais or general manager Jerry Dipoto? What have they told you about where this ball club is headed?
Yeah, I've talked to both of them. We've had some good conversations with each of them. They're very excited. I know we're trying to add a few more pieces to the puzzle, and that's where we're at. So the same thing is just, good young ball club, and I'm excited with the direction, coming off a good year last year, but not quite getting to where they wanted to go. So it's just a lot of excitement in the air is what it feels like to me. And, I can't wait to join up with that and try to get us where we want to be.
Now, Adam, your playing style, kind of a throwback in terms of your approach at the plate. You're not a guy that's going after the launch angle, which has become so popular in baseball over the last, I would say, decade or so. You're a guy that likes to play all across the field, spray it across the field. Where does that approach come from, and just how have you been able to kind of zig while others have zagged over the last, few years in Major League Baseball?
Yeah, I guess it's just part of, understanding who I am as a player, as a hitter. I'm not that big guy that's, going to hit 30 homers or something like that and try to launch it out of the ballpark. So just try to stay inside the baseball, hit the ball where it's pitched, use the whole field, like you said. And when you can use the whole field, it kind of limits the holes in the strike zone and, it makes it tougher for pitchers to pitch. So, that's really what I'm trying to do, drive the ball to all fields and be a tough out. So, in the past when I've gotten in trouble is when I've tried to do too much. So I just try to stick with who I am and be a tough out.
Adam, I always find it fascinating as an athlete where everybody's story in terms of how they find the news out, what the transition's like. It's a lot of things that, everybody else doesn't think about. It's, did we acquire this player or not? Can they help us win or not? But what was it like for you going through that process of hearing the news for the first time and then now having to think about that transition from San Diego now to Seattle? Where's your head out in all this?
Well, when I found out, I was actually in bed Saturday morning.
No way.
So a little bit of a surprise. I'd heard a couple rumblings earlier in the week, and then a few days go by. So I wasn't sure what was going to happen. I knew San Diego was going to make some moves, but I didn't think I'd be the first one to get moved. So, that was pretty cool to be wanted by Seattle. I know they tried really hard at the deadline last year, and I almost ended up there, according to some higher ups. So to be there, now is, I'm pretty excited about it. But it was a whirlwind Saturday for me. And it took a little while, to kind of process what had just happened, I think I'm starting to grasp that now and, start looking into where to live in Seattle and that kind of thing. So it's all coming in and I'm excited about it.
Well, that's good, Adam, because now you got the off season to kind of digest all this, right? And kind of figure out your situation and get set up. So that's good, man. Well, we are pumped to have you here. It is really exciting to know that you're going to be coming here, and you're right. We did try to snag you, tried to get you here to Seattle earlier. Couldn't make it happen for the second half run, but we're definitely excited that you're going to be a part of this thing here in 2022. What is your impression of the of the organization so far? I know, you know, Curtis asked you about, you know, initial conversations, but watching what this young team has done up to this point and knowing where they want to go.
It was a lot of fun watching those guys in the second half last year. You could tell by, just the emotion shown and the guys playing together that they're pretty close-knit. So I actually played ball with Kendall Grademan in college, and see him emotional when he got traded out of there kind of told me a lot about the group and the organization that is there now. So a lot of young guys, too. So, that'll be fun. They seem very hungry about getting after it and winning some ball games. So I'm looking forward to getting in there and going to battle with those guys. But just a lot of excitement is my first, observation of and the conversations that I've had already. It just seems like a lot of excitement around the club and then in the city. So I'm looking forward to that.
Adam, you mentioned, having conversations about where the Mariners are as an organization when you weren't even a member of the organization. Is that something that gets talked about a lot in Major League Baseball clubhouses? Like, man, that team over there, if they add a couple of pieces, watch out for them. Or, man, I like what they're doing over there. Are those conversations you guys have throughout the season? I mean, obviously it's a 162-game season. You're going to be talking about anything and everything with your teammates. But is that something that you guys have noticed over the last couple of years as the Mariners sort of build here with their farm system and now it's sort of rounded out with their major league roster?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say so much, being elsewhere and, you're trying to worry about what you got going on each and every day. So, but you see it. So you see the excitement from the fans, the city, how hard teams are playing and, how engaged they are, especially down the stretch, because you can tell by watching some other teams that they might not be fully engaged down the stretch and they fall off. So, you got to worry about what your own game that you're playing, but at the same time, you see what's going on around the league too.
Adam, I know that you can play a lot of different positions, but real home for you is at second base. How excited are you to play amongst a couple of Gold Glove talented infielders as well with Ty France and J.P. Crawford, the opportunity to flip a couple double plays with those guys?
Yeah, I'm excited about that. I'm trying to add one of those to my collection at some point. Looking forward to getting ready to work with Perry Hill as well. I've heard great things about him. And J.P. and I, we played together, in the fall league back when we were young, I guess. And so I'm looking forward to playing with him again. He's a really good player. And everybody else, too. So, that's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. Great defensive team and try to hop right in there and pull my weight as well.
Adam, Major League Baseball free agency going crazy the last couple of days, and obviously with the lockout looming in the next couple of days, we're probably going to see more and more signings. Mariners fans right now, I think they want to know, are you going to do your part and help recruit some of these guys here to play with you guys in 2022 and beyond?
I'm going to do everything I can.
Love to hear it.
I just want to win some ball games, and I think a few of those guys could help us out a lot. So, yeah, definitely.
Adam, what has been your favorite stop so far? I mean, obviously minor leagues, major leagues, there's so many different places that you've been to and you've seen so far in terms of your stops. What has been one of your more favorite stops so far along your journey?
I guess I'm probably going to go with San Diego. places like living in paradise, so I'm going to have to go with that. I would say Seattle, but I've only been to Seattle
Adam, it's okay. You don't have to pander to us that much. We totally understand if you said San Diego. There's a reason why Russell Wilson lives there in the off season.
Yeah. So that's a good place to live. It's pretty down there, but I've heard great things about Seattle in the summer too. So I'm looking forward to that.
Now, Adam, I can hear the drawl in your voice. You're from the South. You are an alum of the Mississippi State Bulldog baseball program. They are the reigning College World Series champions. How awesome was it to see the program that you were a part of that helped shape you as a baseball player come out victorious in the College World Series?
That's right. It was, you know, when I played, we lost the national championship. So to see them get over the hump and knowing what that means to the community, because it's a small town in Mississippi, and the fans and the whole community and everything, they just breathe baseball down there. So for them to get over the hump, that was, I mean, it was kind of emotional for me. And then I was just so excited for the organization, the fans, the community, and everything, everybody involved, because it was, it was pretty unbelievable to watch that.
Adam, we had a unique experience and still watching a lot of young guys make that transition from the farm system up to the bigs, and seeing how that gulf, that divide from really minor leagues to the bigs is so huge. When did it feel like for you? How long did it feel like it took for you to feel like you finally found your footing and that you were confident at the plate at the big league level?
Well, I like to say or think I was confident when I first got there, but then you get on a roller coaster and you get humbled pretty quickly. It just comes and goes, or it came and gone for, I felt like up and down the whole first 3 years of my career. But then you kind of figure out how to play the game and understand how pitchers attack you and how catchers pitch you and that kind of thing. So it took a while. I mean, the major leagues for a reason. It's really hard to get there, and it's really hard to stay. So it's a tough game. You got to take it one game at a time.
Adam, you got the honor this last July to represent the Pirates organization at the MLB All-Star game for the first time in your career. What was that experience like as a first-time All-Star, being around the game's best and really playing under those bright lights that not many players ever get to play under, during their baseball careers?
Oh, a lot of fun. It was a dream come true. Something you kind of, grow up. You want to make it to the major leagues, but you want to be an All-Star too. So that was really a dream come true. It was, it was a blast being able to play with, some future Hall of Famers and those kind of guys, and just pick their brain a little bit and have fun doing it. So, hopefully can try to do that again this year, because that'd be pretty cool for the team, and hopefully we can replicate that.
Well, Adam, thanks for the time, man. We really appreciate you hopping on with us. We are super excited to see you here in Seattle. I can speak for all of Mariners fans out there. We are definitely pumped to have you a part of this organization. So, Adam, thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
Well, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. Excited as well. Looking forward to it.
It's fun having Adam Frazier on, getting a chance to talk to him and get a feel for what he's like, and very, very chill guy. It seems like
very
a lot of these
so.
Baseball guys are.
Yeah, he lives in Nashville, so I believe that's where he was calling us from. But he's got that southern drawl that everybody's drawn to.
Mm-hmm.
You hear that, it's like, oh, okay, this guy is chill. This guy is relaxed. And look, he's your starting second baseman as it currently stands. That infield right now, you've got an all-star at second base. You've got J.P. Crawford last year who played at an all-star level for a while. Ty France, with more experience under his belt, who knows, maybe he could develop into an all-star level player. He was great last year for the majority of the season. He had that one stretch where his wrist was hurting, but shook that off and came back. Look, third base is now the top priority for the Mariners right now.
You've
got to get this done.
It is, and it's unique because Frazier, obviously, he looks like your second baseman and with the news of Marcus Semien, but if you get somebody like Trevor Story, that changes the conversation, too. I mean, Story can play third base. Adam Frazier obviously can play. He's had time out in the outfield. So the idea is potentially having him be kind of a super utility guy. That's what Jeff Passan tweeted out when the trade initially happened. So the Mariners and Jerry DePoto still are looking to make moves. I still believe that they're looking to add and upgrade, and that Adam Frazier is not the only move that they will make. But would like to start to see that happen, Curtis.
Wouldn't mind it.
We'll get back to that later, but let's get to Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
First down, Jake. It's flight tracking season, and there appears to be a flight headed from Seattle to the Fresno area, boarded by Jen Cohen, athletic director, which means Kalen DeBoer probably getting interviewed right now. My question to you is, Kalen DeBoer, the best the Huskies can do as their next head coach?
I believe that Kalen DeBoer is someone that can absolutely be successful here at UW. Now, the reason why I believe a lot of people are looking at Kalen DeBoer and saying, really, is this what you're going to do? Is because Jen Cohen, after the press conference of saying Jimmy Lake is no longer going to be the head coach of this program, she made a direct statement saying that resources will not be an issue in terms of finding the next head coach. And to her words, finding the very best. And so when you have those kind of conversations, you're thinking Matt Campbell, you're thinking Dave Aranda, and you know, names like that. You're thinking of them not being necessarily as aggressive as SC going out and prying a guy like Lincoln Riley, but you're expecting them to be aggressive. You're expecting them to go out and make some moves and get some interviews with some of the name's hottest head coaches, potential head coaches out there that you could pull to the University of Washington. So I think Kalen DeBoer would be a letdown for a lot of UW fans out there who are hopeful of a bigger name. But make no mistake, Kalen DeBoer has been successful in every single opportunity that he's gotten, all the way down to the NAIA level where he dominated. Then as offensive coordinator and as head coach, he has been successful everywhere he's gone. So from an X's and O's standpoint, from an offensive standpoint, I think Kalen DeBoer could be a very good hire for the University of Washington. My question then goes to, what does he do on defense? My next question goes to, how is he on the recruiting trail? Because that is going to be another factor when you're competing against Mario Cristobal, when you're competing against Lincoln Riley, when you're competing against Jake Dicker in your own state. How are you going to do on the recruiting trail? And that is a huge factor for the University of Washington to get themselves back to the level and the standard that is expected at that university. So big shoes that Kalen DeBoer is going to have to fill at the University of Washington. Not in terms of who he's replacing, but in terms of the expectation that is there for the next head coach at the University of Washington.
Second down. Jake, which matchup are you looking for the Seahawks to exploit offensively tonight?
The matchup that I'm looking to for the Seahawks to exploit is man-to-man coverage. So who is the best man-to-man receiver that the Seahawks have? That's DK Metcalf, another guy who has a lot of success over the years in man-to-man coverage. Tyler Lockett, you have to get those two guys going when man-to-man opportunities present itself. And that is what I'm going to be looking for this offense, for Russell Wilson, to not just recognize man-to-man situations, but to attack, to be aggressive, and to torch the Washington football team when they go into these man-to-man situations, which they will do plenty of. I believe that Jack Del Rio is probably going to play out of the same playbook he did last year, which is play a significant amount of too high coverage against the Seattle Seahawks defense or against the Seattle Seahawks offense. But they will throw in man-to-man, Curtis. And when they do, they have to be able to capitalize with their two best playmakers.
Third down. Jake, whose role will expand in the running back depth chart with Rashad Penny and Travis Homer ruled out?
Curtis, it's your man, the one that you picked for your bold take, DJ Dallas. DJ Dallas's role is going to have to expand. He's going to have to be a factor. Alex Collins can't just carry the load by himself in this game versus Washington. And the thing that DJ Dallas did show in this last game that I really liked was he got more opportunities in obvious passing situations in two-minute drives. And DJ Dallas, to me, is the guy that you want to see take over that role as your third down back. And Travis Homer has been good in pass protection. DJ Dallas has stepped up and has performed better in that area. And I also think that he's just a better pass catcher. He's more dynamic. And with that role and with him being successful in that role last week, I thought his role was going to be expanded regardless. But now that you have Penny and Homer out, I expect a significant amount of playing time for DJ Dallas as well.
Fourth down. Jake, what are the three Seahawks keys to victory tonight?
Okay, number one, control the line of scrimmage. Both sides of the ball, it's going to be really important to slow down the Washington defensive tackles. They've got three really, really good players that can get after it. Tim Settle, you got You got Tim Settle. You've got Darren Payne. You've got Jonathan Allen. Sorry, I turned off my mic there for a second. and then on the other side of it, you've got your running game and Antonio Gibson and J.D. McKissic. That offensive line for Washington is very, very good. So you have to own the line of scrimmage there first and foremost. The second thing is offensively, you've got to unleash the passing attack. You've got to go for it. You've got to get Russell Wilson the ball on first, second down. You've got to use more play action pass. Your back's up against the wall. This game, it's either you're going to go down swinging or you're going to lose and you're not even going to have an identity going with it. Rely on your best player to get you out of it. That's what I want to see. And then the third and final thing that I think that is a key to victory is you've got to pressure Taylor Heinicke. You have to put consistent pressure on him, force him into mistakes. If you don't do that, Taylor Heinicke is a good football player and has good weapons on the offensive side of the ball where he can beat this defense. So that is going to be my three keys. Unleash the passing offense, control the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball, and pressure Taylor Heinicke.
I like it. I want to see it.
All right, that's Forward Down Territory brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Don't forget, you can watch the show live on 710sports.com/video. All right, the College Carousel, Coaching Carousel, keep spinning. We'll break it all down next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacy.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
Welcome to The Timeline. This hour of Jake and Stacy is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Here we are reading the top stories that you will see on your social media feeds, your timelines. Number one on the timeline, USC pulling off a huge shocker by hiring Lincoln Riley away from Oklahoma to be its next head coach. Curtis, when you saw this hit the timeline, what was your reaction?
I was stunned. I was stunned speechless yesterday when it happened. But look, props to USC for going after the biggest fish possible in college football, maybe not named Nick Saban, and saying, you know what, that's our guy. That's the guy who we want, and it doesn't matter what kind of dollar amount we have to pay. And I would imagine Lincoln Riley's making probably north of $10 million a year.
Oh, yes.
And
I think he was making 7.5 with Oklahoma.
Oh, that's chump change now to what he's making in L.A. And, yeah, they've got a much richer football history at USC than really any school in the Pac-12. Their alumni base is very deep and very wealthy, especially with how many players they've sent to the NFL and how many superstar players they've had in the NFL. You look at the reaction of all the USC alums, you know, Reggie Bush and Matt Leinart, probably the two most famous ones right now, at least in recent years. They were thrilled with the hire. I would imagine anybody with a connection to that program is eyeing the years that Pete Carroll had when he was at USC. Now, for the rest of the Pac-12, boy, that could not have been a worse thing to happen to any school that is sort of on the fringe of contention, where you had all these years when USC was down, all these years to take advantage of and build your program up. I'm looking at you, Washington.
Yeah, absolutely.
We weren't able to make it happen.
That's what's so frustrating, right? And so now SC, I didn't even know Lincoln Riley was even considering possibly leaving. Then there's, you know, conversations about Oklahoma moving to the SEC, Lincoln Riley wanting to, you know, have this appeal of LA and starting it really, really, really taking his brand. And when I say brand, I don't mean like from a marketing perspective, but more so as to, you know, his coaching chops and being able to say Lincoln Riley didn't just take over a program that was already well off from Bob Stoops and just, you know, kept a good thing going. Now you're going to SC and you're able to start something up yourself, right? From the ground up, basically, with all of the resources available to you, with the opportunity, as you mentioned, Mario Cristobal being really your only competition, but you have the leg up over everybody. Being in Southern California, I mean, that's huge.
I was just going to say, can we take a second to appreciate the careful talking around of Lincoln Riley? Because on Saturday night, he was asked, are you taking the LSU job? He said, I'm not taking the LSU job. Next question.
He was right about
that. He was
emphatic.
Yes. He was not taking the LSU job.
That is correct.
So good on him.
He was taking the other abbreviated school.
Yes. Right. The other thing that I loved that I saw, and did you guys see this too? Apparently, Lincoln Riley has a scheduled – You know, it's kind of like the Pete Carroll show that he does. And
he no-showed.
The guy that does the interview with him was stood up. Lincoln Riley, he was there sitting there waiting for Lincoln Riley to show up. He said he was told that he would be a couple, maybe an hour delayed, then a couple hours delayed, and then never showed. That poor guy. Could you imagine?
Just sitting there. Who do you interview at that point? Maybe this is me getting a little hot takey here, but there's always the tweets that immediately follow a shocking coaching change in college football, basically saying like, oh, how could this coach leave his players so suddenly? Look, there are no such thing as two-week notices in the coaching world. There's no such thing as two-week notices in coaching searches. Like, it is never going to be comfortable when a coach leaves his program or a coach gets, you know, fired from his program. That's just not how it works. I feel like the outrage over coaches when they choose to pick other jobs and like, oh, how could you only, you know, tell these guys in a simple meeting and then be done after 10 minutes? There's no easy way to handle something like this.
No.
Like, there's no way you can absolutely, you know, let everybody down softly and make sure that there's a smooth transition. It's just not possible.
Correct. It is the craziest business out there. And that's why for a long time you looked at the transfer rules for players. It was so frustrating because coaches didn't have to live by that code. They didn't have to live up to that expectation. There was no honor. There was no loyalty that is there for coaches as there is for players in the expectation that is. I think that that was always backwards. I think that this whole process is completely ridiculous to begin with, Curtis. But you're right. I mean, it's just the way college sports works. And there's no easy way to go about it. And so if you're Lincoln Riley, there's no good way to leave.
Yeah.
There's no good way that you could handle this. And so it does change a lot of individuals' lives. There's 100 guys in that locker room at Oklahoma that this move is going to impact. There's no question. There's another 100 guys at SC that this is going to impact for, you know, in terms of Lincoln Riley showing up. So there's a lot of change and turmoil that happens in college football every single year. That is always hard. That's always difficult. It's always a difficult transition. But I agree with you that to me is always just the hyper-focus on that aspect of it is always, I think, overstated because it's the way it is.
Before we get to the next story, there's a text from the 253 saying, Spencer Rattler announced he'll be transferring this morning. What are the odds he transfers to USC? I think it's zero. Why would you transfer to a coach that benched you? I think
correct, and you got Jackson Dart,
Dart, Puka Shell necklace.
That's right.
I think the Oklahoma quarterback that people should really be focused on entering the transfer portal is Caleb Williams.
Without question, Caleb Williams is the guy that everyone's looking to right now, and I think Caleb Williams is also very curious to see who's going to be the next guy at Oklahoma, make his decision off of that. But if I'm Caleb Williams and I know that I love Lincoln Riley and that's who I came to Oklahoma to play for. I don't know if it really matters. I mean, I probably would be going to SC right along with him, even with Jackson Dart already there. So Lincoln Riley is already in a really good spot when it comes to the quarterback aspect of things. All right, let's go to the next story. Jen Cohen is reported to be meeting with Fresno State head coach Kalen DeBoer today in Fresno. She will return tonight. We don't know if it's going to lend itself to an announcement at the end of the day, but that is right now being reported that she is going down and having an interview with him, which Curtis, to me, really, really screams that Kalen DeBoer is going to be the next head coach for the University of Washington.
Yeah, I don't think there is any question right now as to who the Huskies have targeted. Pete Thamel of Yahoo Sports, who is one of the newsbreakers in the college football world, he is saying right now that Fresno State's Kalen DeBoer is in conversations about becoming the next head coach at Washington. A deal could be done tonight or tomorrow. So when somebody of that stature is out there reporting that it looks like this could be headed towards Washington hiring Kalen DeBoer.
Do you like it? Is it a hire that you think is very underwhelming for the university, or do you think it's a good hire?
I think it's a good hire in terms of, you know, offensively, I think Washington is going to see an uptick in production here. What Kalen DeBoer did at Fresno State is something that Chris Peterson couldn't do, and that was turn Jake Haener into one of the nation's best quarterbacks. Look, stats are stats. Jake Haener was awesome this year at Fresno State.
There's
no chance he's going to transfer back to Washington. I think we can easily rule that out. But look, Kalen DeBoer has produced at every stop along the way offensively. Now, like you said, Jake, there are huge questions about his defensive scheme and how he is as a recruiter, especially recruiting at the Power 5 level. Recruiting in the Mountain West, significantly different than what it is at the Power 5. And not only that, but also a top three program in the Pac-12, which is significantly more, you know, there's more pressure on you there than there is at Fresno.
Yeah, I would agree. And look, Kalen DeBoer is not the sexy name or the big name that I think UW fans had high hopes for. The one question that I have with DeBoer is his recruiting. Will he be able to recruit successfully to the University of Washington to compete and keep up with USC and Oregon right now and the rest of the schools in the Pac-12? That is my only question. In terms of how successful he can be offensively, I think it's a no-brainer from that standpoint. Everything else is all the things that I have questions about. But Kalen DeBoer has been very successful. Now he's got to do it with the highest profile job that he has had yet. But it has been very impressive. If you go and watch and follow his career, every stop, every step of the way, the offense that he has coached at has improved significantly. And honestly, the two most recent jobs that he had, the OC at Indiana, they outperformed expectations drastically. I mean, they were extremely competitive within the Big Ten. I mean, it was really impressive. And then you see the job that he's done at Fresno State. Obviously, it's been very, very positive, but he's got to prove it at a very high level with tough competition. And so I think this is a good hire. It's just underwhelming to the expectations and really to the hope in the aggressiveness that you would want the University of Washington and Jen Cohen to have in terms of going out and really trying to go and get one of the bigger names in college football. But I think this year, more so than any other year, it's proven that a lot of those guys, it's not easy to move them. And I think there's been a different thought process from a lot of these head coaches in terms of maybe staying where you've got a good thing going.
It kind of speaks to the volatility of coaching in college football, where none of us knew who these guys were 2 years ago when Chris Peterson and Mike Leach left their programs. None of us knew who Kalen DeBoer was. Fresno State fans didn't even know who Kalen DeBoer was. And same with Coug fans with Jake Dickert. And now these are the two guys that are probably going to be leading these programs for the very foreseeable future.
Right.
DeBoer and Dickert, Apple Cup 2022.
Coming at you.
Get psyched, baby.
That's right. All right. Conversation you should be psyched about is that the Mariners must sign one of these two players in order to save this offseason. We'll talk about that next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
Welcome back to Jake and Stacy. Jake Heaps here hosting today. Stacy is out. Got Curtis Rogers next to me. We got Mike Lefko on the board. We got a fun show here going on.
Well, there's been just so much to talk about.
There has. I mean, we've got a Seahawks game here tonight.
And it feels like it's just kind of on the back burner.
Right. Now. Right. It's crazy. And a big reason why is because you look at Major League Baseball right now and the frenzy that's going on with free agency just before the, what would you call it, lockout, dead period. The CBA is going to be coming to a close here in the next couple days. And before that, you're seeing a flurry of free agent signings, and you're really seeing the market pick up, I think more so than anybody really anticipated. You thought maybe there would be some big-name guys that would sign before the deadline, but you're seeing Major League Baseball get really, really active here. And, I mean, I don't know how many teams really anticipated that being the case, but you look at the Mariners, you look at the situation that they're in. They went and traded for Adam Frazier, which I think was a very good addition to this team. But it certainly can't be the big addition of the offseason if the Mariners really and Jerry DePoto really want to truly fulfill on the promise that they gave to Mariners fans that they would be aggressive, that they would go and get impact, that they would go and truly improve this team and this lineup to compete for the playoffs this next year. And Curtis, with Marcus Semien now being signed to the Texas Rangers, it puts a lot of pressure on the Mariners to have to land either Trevor Story or Chris Bryant.
And what stinks about now having narrowed down their list of options to just those two guys is that there's still two other options out there, Carlos Correa and Corey Seager. But because I think of two things recently that have came from Jerry DePoto, it has taken the Mariners out of the running for both of those guys. In Correa's case, it's him publicly saying that J.P. Crawford is our shortstop going forward. No ifs, ands, or buts about it.
Right.
And in Corey Seager's case, it's the public spat between Kyle Seager, his camp, and Jerry DePoto in the Mariners front office. If you're Corey Seager and you see your brother, your flesh and blood, have a public spat with a team that might be in the running that you might consider, I don't think that would entice me to sign with Seattle if I were Corey Seager.
No, not at all. And I don't believe that Corey Seager even thought for a second that the Mariners were going to be a realistic option for him, because obviously between this situation with Kyle Seager and the Mariners have been going on for quite a while now. So I never really saw that as a real option unless they wanted to make that play and they wanted to, you know, give Kyle Seager a new deal or have him have the one-year deal. I just didn't see that becoming a realistic option for you. The Correa situation is unique and interesting. Planting your flag down with J.P. Crawford, I don't really have a problem with. But at the same time, would J.P. Crawford really be that upset if you asked him to switch over to second base if you landed Carlos Correa? I know as an athlete, you have the utmost confidence in yourself and you believe in yourself and you want the organization to commit to you, but I don't believe that would be a shot at J.P. Crawford. Now, athletes are weird. Athletes do look at that and could potentially get offended by it, but I'm sorry. I mean, if you had a legit shot at Carlos Correa, you should absolutely be taking that if it was a possibility.
Oh, absolutely. If I were, I mean, this is me speaking for J.P. Crawford, but if it was a real possibility that the Mariners could land one of Correa or Seager, I would absolutely volunteer my spot to be like, hey, look, I'll play second base. If you want to get this guy in here to play shortstop, and that's the only way he will sign is if you guarantee him the shortstop job, then obviously, yeah, you would definitely do whatever it takes to bring him in. You know, we heard from Adam Frazier at the top of this hour saying that he was going to do whatever it takes, you know, to start recruiting these guys to come to Seattle here because, look, he wants to win. We heard it from him, how he's
right.
Excited to win, for, you know, or at least to play for a chance at going to the playoffs, which is something he never got to experience in Pittsburgh, didn't get to experience that last year in San Diego. Maybe there's a shot for him to do it here in Seattle. But, look, if the Mariners are going to make the playoffs, they've got to get busy quick here because, look, there is going to be a freeze on the market for an indefinite amount of time. And when you're working in indefinites, you want definites. And what you can do to help yourself in that instance is sign some guys. And there are guys out there available. We've targeted Trevor Story and Chris Bryant as probably the top two, the most important targets for this Mariners team. You've got third base open. Chris Bryant has played there his entire career. Trevor Story has yet to do so, but could, I think, in a pinch. There are other guys out there. You need an outfielder, Seiya Suzuki from Japan. He's getting posted. Michael Conforto from the Mets is available. There are guys like that. And then you also need pitchers, too. You need pitchers in the worst way. You're not getting Kevin Gausman. Robbie Ray's still out there. I don't know if the Mariners have as much
interest. Haven't really been linked to him.
No, they have not, which is kind of a bummer because he's coming off a Cy Young award-winning season.
Right.
Seems like a guy you'd want on your team.
Well, sure. I do believe so, but at the same time, it comes down to years and money again. Are you willing to commit the years and money to somebody like that who really, you know, coming off their best season, are they going to be able to sustain that? Is Robbie Ray going to be able to sustain that? I think there's a fair argument that the answer is yes, but I do believe there's an inherent risk that you take on rather than going and getting somebody like Marcus Stroman, who has been relatively consistent throughout his career. It's not ace-level stuff, but it's a very good number two at the very least. And so I think that is a definite option for them that's still on the table. But to your point, Curtis, they got to go sign impact, and they've got to make it happen now. And you've got not only a fan base that is anxious and wanting it to happen, that's one thing. But you have players within your own clubhouse that are looking to you, Jerry DePoto, are looking to this front office and going, all right, when is the commitment going to be shown here?
Mitch Hitter wrote 2,000 words on it.
Exactly. Exactly. Right? And I think a lot of players echo that sentiment. And there's so much momentum and so much positivity within the clubhouse that a big move is going to really, really boost the aspirations of this Mariners club. So is Adam Frazier a nice signing? Yes, but he's not the guy that gets everybody in that clubhouse looking at it going, yep, this front office, it means every word that they said. The fan base looking at Jerry DePoto and saying, yep, you're following through on everything that you promised. So there is a lot that can happen here between now and the deadline. There is, and I would expect a lot to happen, but in regards to the Mariners, they can't just go in with Adam Frazier being their lone move before this deadline closes. They have to be aggressive. They have to put themselves out there. And Trevor Story or Chris Bryant is just one of many moves that they need to make, in my opinion, before this deadline ends up hitting. All right, guys, we don't forget, you can listen to us on the go or catch up with the show if you miss it. Subscribe to the Jake and Stacey podcast. It's on Apple Podcasts or whatever you get your podcasts. Please don't forget to rate and review if you do subscribe. We thank you very much for doing so. All right, coming up, Brady Henderson joins us for a preview of the Seahawks-Washington football team matchup that's coming your way next.